Canto 6, Chapter 1. Dharma and Adharma, the life of Ajamila. Sri Parikshit said, O great devotee, in the beginning, in the second canto, you described how, following the path of finding liberation by renunciation, one with the spirit of the Absolute, in the process of yoga, gradually puts an end to the cycle of rebirth. With one's attention focused on the three modes of nature, O sage, one is time and again caught in the clutches of the material world where there is a constant renewal of forms. The hells belonging to the different sorts of impiety were by you described in the fifth canto, as also the period of the first Manu, the son of Brahma Svayambhuva. You described the character and the dynasties of Priyavrata and Uttanapada, as also the different realms, dvipas, regions, varshas, oceans, mountains, rivers, gardens and trees of the earthly sphere, and the characteristics and measurements of the luminaries and the lower worlds created by the Almighty Lord. Please explain to me now, O man of great fortune, what a human being must do in this world in order not to undergo all these sorts of terrible conditions of heavily suffering in hell. Sri Shuka said, when someone in this life does not take the necessary countermeasures, when one is not of proper atonement after having engaged wrongly in the mind, in one's expressions and with one's body, such a person, after having died, undoubtedly will end up in one of the different types of hell of terrible suffering I formerly described. Before one has died, and before one's body is too old and decrepit, one should therefore, in this world, as soon as possible, endeavor to atone for one's sins with a proper estimate of their gravity, just like an experienced physician determines the cause in order to treat a disease. The king said, what is the value of atonement when one cannot control oneself despite hearing and seeing about it and knowing how harmful to oneself and others it is to act badly? Sometimes ceasing with the sin, sometimes engaging in it again, I consider the process of atonement quite useless. It is like with an elephant covering itself with dust after coming out of the water. The son of Vyasa said, by countering one fruitful deed with another deed with compensations, there is indeed no end to that action when there is a lack of self-knowledge. Sins are only atoned for after self-searching, after investigation. Those who eat the right food will not be plagued by all kinds of diseases. Similarly, the one who manages to discipline himself, O king, will more and more qualify for well-being and happiness. By means of voluntary penance and chastity, by equal-mindedness and sense-control, by sacrificing and truthfulness, by inner and outer cleanliness, by refraining from violence and abuse, and by self-restraint, they who, endowed with faith and knowledge of Dharma, are calm and steady in their actions, words and intelligence, put an end to all kinds of sin, however great and abominable, the way a fire consumes a bamboo forest. Some who rely on nothing but unalloyed devotion unto Vasudeva manage to destroy all their badness completely, just like the sun dissipates fog. A man full of sin, O king, is certainly not as much purified by penance and such as the devotee is who surrendered his life to Krishna in dedicated service and to the person, the representative of God. In this world, the most appropriate path is the safe path that, free from fear, is followed by the well-behaved and auspicious devotees who are of full surrender to Narayana. All the atonement well performed by someone who is not devoted to Narayana will not purify, O king, the same way the water of all rivers cannot purify a liquor jar. once the mind is of full surrender to the two lotus feet of Lord Krishna, one is of the right atonement. One will, attached to his qualities, then never encounter in this world, or even in one's dreams, Yamaraj and his servants carrying the noose. Concerning this, the example is given of a very old story of a discussion between the servants of Vishnu and Yamaraj. Please, let me tell you about it. Once in the city of Kanyakubja, there was a Brahmin named Ajamila who, as the husband of a maid servant, had lost his way in association with her and therefrom no longer endeavored for the truth. He had resorted to reprehensible activities as arresting and robbing people and cheating. Thus he maintained his family in a most sinful way and caused others a lot of trouble. Caring for her sons this way, managing his existence, O king, the great lapse of time passed of 88 years of his life. He, as an old man, had 10 sons, and the youngest of them, held very dear by the father and mother, was addressed by the name of Narayana. The little boy was the apple of his eye, and the old man enjoyed it very much to witness his prattling and playing. As he ate, drank, and chewed, he, controlled by his affection, also fed the child and gave it something to drink, but, foolish as he was, he failed to notice that his life drew to a close. When the time of his death arrived, he, who had lived in ignorance, thus had a mind fixed on his little son, who carried the name of Narayana. He saw how three characters approached him with fearful features, twisted faces, and their hairs standing on end, who, with the noose in their hands, were ready to take him away. Terrified, and with tears in his eyes, he thus loudly called for his nearby playing child named Narayana. The moment Vishnu's servants heard the name of the Lord, their master, from the mouth of the dying man, O king, they came immediately. As the messengers of death were pulling Ajamila away from the heart of the maidservant's husband, the Vishnu Duttas forbade it with resounding voices. The messengers of Yamaraj, thus being thwarted, replied, "Who do you all think you are to oppose the authority of the king of Dharma? Whose servants are you? Where are you from, and why have you come here? Why do you stop us in this? Do you belong to the demigods, the lesser gods, or to the perfected souls? You all, with your lotus-like eyes, yellow garments, helmets, glittering earrings, and lotus-flower garlands, you all, looking so young and beautiful, with your forearms, bow, quiver of arrows, and the decoration of his sword, club, conch, disc, and lotus-flower, you dissipate in all directions the darkness with the effulgence of the light emanating from you. For what reason do you deny us, the servants of the maintainer of Dharma?" Shuka said, "Thus being addressed by the Yamadutas, they, who followed the word of Vasudeva, replied with a smile, saying the following with voices resounding like rumbling clouds. The Vishnu Dutta said, "If you really are all the servants of the king of Dharma, then just tell us what the principles of Dharma and the characteristics of Adharma are. How and where should punishment be administered? And are all or only some human beings who take advantage of others punishable?" The Yamadutta said, "Dharma, or religious principles, is what is prescribed in the Vedas. Adharma is the opposite. The Vedas are Narayana himself and originated from him alone, so we've heard. All that manifested with its specific qualities, names, activities and forms has by him been created from his position in heaven by means of the interaction of the basic material qualities of passion, goodness and slowness. The sun, the fire, the sky, the air, the gods, the moon, the evening, the day and the night, The directions, the water and the land are all evidence of the personal dharma, the very nature of the embodied living entity. Adharma, in the sense of going against nature with all these witnessing natural divinities, is recognized as the form of behavior qualifying for retribution, for the reaction deemed appropriate for all the actions of offenders that deserve punishment. They who, under the influence of the natural modes, are engaged in actions motivated for results, can be of good, pious deeds, as also of deeds directly opposite to that, O pure souls, but no embodied soul can exist without engaging in action. The extent to which someone in this life is of certain righteous or bad deeds assures him in his next life of the enjoyment or suffering that is their result. The way one, here in this life, among the living beings, O best of the demigods, experiences the different effects of the basic qualities of matter in the form of their three attributes, namely movement and inertia, one may expect to have a similar experience elsewhere in another world. Just as the present time carries the characteristics of what was and what will become, someone's present birth likewise is indicative of the dharma and adharma of what one did and will be doing. The Godhead of Yamaraj is a great lord as good as Brahma. He, in his abode, sees before his mind's eye the form one previously had and then understands what one's future will be. Just like someone who, with what he projects in his sleep, has lost the awareness of what precedes or follows that dream, one is equally unaware of a life before or after this present birth. With the five working senses, the five senses of perception, and their five objects engaged in pursuing his goals, he, with his mind, as the 16th element, is of awareness. But as the one soul, as a person, he himself constitutes the 17th element in enjoying the threefold nature of reality. With that 16-part subtle body as a result of the three forces of our greater nature, the living entity is subjected to a difficult to overcome, repeated series of births in which it experiences jubilation, lamentation, fear and misery. The embodied soul, lacking in awareness for not being in control of his senses and mind, is against his will led to actions for the sake of his own material interests. Thus being bewildered, he, like a silkworm, weaves himself into the cocoon of his own karma. No one can exist but for a moment without doing something. One is by the three modes automatically forced to perform the fruitful actions belonging to one's nature. On the basis of the imperceptible, unknown cause of that so very powerful personal nature, from the womb of the mother and the seed of the father, the gross and subtle body finds its existence to their likeness. Because of this association with material nature, the position of the living entity has turned into an awkward one of forgetfulness. But if one but for a short while manages to enjoy the association of the Lord, that problem is overcome. This man, Ajamila, well versed in the Vedas, of a good character and good conduct, was initially a reservoir of good qualities. He conscientiously, mild, controlled and truthful, kept to his vows and knew his mantras. He was neat and clean, of the greatest esteem in service of the Guru, the fire god, his guests and members of the household, and was free from false pride, friendly to all, faultless, non-envious, and of the finest choice of words. Some day, this Brahmin, following the orders of his father, went into the forest to collect fruits there, flowers, samit and kusha. On his way back, he saw some shudra, very lusty, engaged with a promiscuous maidservant who, drunken because of Maireya nectar, intoxicated, rolled her eyes to and fro. under the influence, her dress had slackened, and he, unashamed, having fallen from proper conduct, stood close to her, singing and laughing, having a good time with her. When Ajamila saw her with turmeric decorated arm of the lusty Shudra around her, he all of a sudden, with a heart full of lust, fell victim to bewilderment. From within, trying to regain control, he reminded himself of what was taught, but, agitated as he was by Cupid, he failed to restrain his mind. Provoked by the sight, he, who in his bewilderment stood senseless, resembled a planet in eclipse. With his attention focused on her, he, that very moment, gave up his dharma completely. He decided that he would please her as far as the money allowed he had from his father. To keep her satisfied, he thus catered to every material desire that came to her mind. His youthful wife, the Brahmin daughter of a respectable family he had married, he, in his sin, abandoned directly after his mind was caught by the looks of the unchaste woman. Doing whatever possible, he, in his weakness, properly or else improperly, procured the money needed to maintain the family consisting of her and her many children. Because this man acted so irresponsibly and broke with all the rules of the Shastra, for a long time sinfully passing his time impiously with filthy practices, he is most condemned. Not having atoned for his perpetual sinning, we will take him to the presence of the Lord of Punishment, where, being chastised, he will find purification.